Today is Friday, November 2nd, 2018, and this is Daily DVR. Hello and welcome back to Daily DVR. You can check us out at dvrpodcast.com. We've got a lot of other great pods like Podcast Winterfell, Westworld Theorycast. You can also become a patron. Get this podcast 5 days a week ad-free. Go over to patreon.com/DVR. We are free Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, but you know what? I do want to tell you, I've got some exciting news, and beginning on Monday, our Monday, Wednesday, and Friday shows will be presented by Cufflinks.com, baby. Our friends at Cufflinks.com, love them. Go check them out. Lots of great products, and they're going to be the presenting sponsor for the podcast. We still will have the Patreon shows on Tuesday and Thursday. They're going to be a little bit different, get a little bit more personal kind of stuff, a little bit out there, more free form kind of stuff. So it's going to provide me an opportunity to really do kind of two different shows for people. And the Patreon's always ad free. But if you want to stick with us here on the free stuff, that's the goodness. You get to hear about cufflinks.com. And on the other line, it is Friday. You can hear him there. I heard a little breathing. That's the man himself, Justin Thomas. How you doing, Justin?
I am doing fantastic, breathing a little bit heavy because I was out of breath trying to get cufflinks.com up when you mentioned it to check it out, and happy to be here, happy to be a part of it, and excited for all the big things coming your way.
Yeah, baby, coming all our ways. We're all on this journey together. It's kind of what I love about podcasting. I always feel like I never feel like I'm a guy sitting at a mic talking to myself. I always feel like I'm talking to other people.
Even when you're not, you know what I mean?
Even when I'm not.
Yeah, my therapist says that's normal, but yeah. I pay him, so I get away with a lot.
All right, everybody. So we've got some news today, and then we're going to dive into what happened. We got a really good response from our sitcom discussion last week, and I just love the opportunity, and I really thank you, Justin. I love the opportunity to just kind of talk about like TV and film in more of a meta way and what's happening. So there's three articles that I'm going to have in the show notes, and I think Justin might have them on screen or something fancy like that. And one's from Fast Company. It's called The Death of Hollywood's Middle Class. There's another article. Steve McQueen says peak TV era is over. And there was it's kind of a part of that conversation. So there was an article from Screen Rant as well that Iron Fist and Luke Cage cancellation reason revealed by Netflix viewer data. So there was a company that kind of went into the viewer data, and I thought that was kind of interesting to have a talk basically about peak TV in general, and just kind of have a long-ranging discussion, and we'll get to that. Hey, Justin, before we go any further, did you want to talk about your rebrand of your channel and the new name and everything?
Yeah, a little bit. I have changed to Top Shelf Fandom. The Justin Thomas Show is kind of was carried over from my DJing days, and I did a little bit of radio work and all that, and I kind of always imagined the Justin Thomas Show in the morning, and by my voice right there, you can sound why that didn't happen. But, I've said this before. I went to school for, you know, I've had more tours of college than people had in Nam, and I kind of dip my toes in everything. I have some marketing experience, and the Justin Thomas Show does not imply what the channel is about. They're like, are you into golf? I'm not a celebrity myself, so it doesn't really work. So I had my channel, unfortunately, wrongfully shut down for covering the very risque Victoria on BBC. The problem was I was literally the only person covering it, and the rest of the videos were those videos where it's acting like you could watch episode, and then it'll be like, go to stream.com, and it's some robot voice. So I got looped in with them after shaming YouTube on Twitter with enough help from friends and, you know, subscribers. I got some attention, and they looked at it and realized it was a mistake. But during that time, I had created Top Shelf Fandom because I had to look at this as like, hey, I might not get my channel back, so I need to just keep my feet on the ground running. And I created it, and I like the branding so much more. And I have been fighting ever since to switch it over. And I just said, what's the worst that could happen? So yeah, Top Shelf Fandom, I think totally fits what I do, and I'm happy with it. I had some art already made, and I'm going to get some art made in the future when I get some more Patreons. you know, wink, wink. And we will go from there. But yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy people seem to take to it.
That's awesome, man. Good. Yeah, I was just thinking, we got to talk about that. So we're going to jump into some news. And the first bit of news, and I know Justin covers Game of Thrones, and of course we do as well over on Podcast Winterfell. And there was a big article that was released on EW, and there was a good, I like this article on IndieWire, kind of framed what was in that article, gave you kind of the talking points of what's happening. And I know that even today, I think Vulture had a little bit more of an exclusive and basically was kind of like detailing what the first episode was going to be. And I wanted to talk about it with you, Justin. First off, I want to ask you, we've talked a little bit about spoilers. Do you, when you see stuff like this, like this is kind of exciting for me. I like to hear little things like Peter Dinklage says that the last battle is brutal. It makes the Battle of the Bastards look like a theme park. And Emily, what's her name? Daenerys.
Amelia Clark.
Amelia, sorry, Emily. Sometimes do they call her Emma or Amelia? I don't know. Okay.
If you want to anglicize it, you can. Yeah, whatever you feel comfortable doing. No, Amelia. Yeah.
But she said that it was just like, and her and of course our man Jon Snow were just saying like, it's brutal the whole season, you know, that the it's relentless and just giving us a lot of details. I tend to skim these articles. I got to be honest with you. I didn't read the Vulture one, because I feel like the line between spoiler and news is now completely erased. And yeah. I feel like when I saw that Vulture said, here's details of the first episode, I literally would not have been surprised to read something that I would maybe read on like Winter is Coming or Watcher on the Wall in their spoiler section just blatantly as an article. So do you read this stuff or how much do you pay attention to it?
Yeah. And if anybody's been watching my newly developed video podcast, you'll know that I pretty much almost every single one has had a section where I am just kind of spitting venom at some of these articles, especially some of these articles that are using spoiler in the title. And it is literally just them using third hand journalism and they're reporting on some like just minuscule Reddit posts and counted it as a spoiler. So I guess it's what constitutes as a spoiler. The stuff about the first scene of season 8, that came out almost a year ago. I actually did a video on it and that was released from HBO. So I don't consider that to be a spoiler. Oh, okay. Because obviously they want us to know it. So it's all about what do you consider to be a spoiler? Plot leaks and whatnot. Yes, those are spoilers. As a content creator, I'm not going to lie, I don't seep them out, but I have to be aware of what's going on in the community. So I'm always aware of them and it doesn't really hurt the way I enjoy the show or, you know, impair the way in which I, you know, am able to enjoy it.
Yeah. I'm on the other side. I I've always struggled with it as a, like you're saying, as a content creator, podcaster too. I struggle with making, you know, I mean, for all intents and purposes, I could do a Podcast Winterfell episode and should do a Podcast Winterfell episode about this news, but I don't want to read it. I just want to read. I find things interesting. Like, okay, they shot a 55-day battle scene. To me, now that is old news too. That came out a while ago, but that is extraordinary. A little bit like that, I can take. But describing the first scene, like you were saying, and the way they kind of, they're even like, you know, comparing it to the beginning of the season of the series. And I just feel like it's a little bit too much for me. I really just want to be shocked and surprised, but I struggle of how deep I should kind of get into that stuff because when it happens, I'm going to get really into it. I'll spend a week talking about that episode and that scene. And I almost want to save it for that and just enjoy it with everyone at the same time. Because really, the majority of people do not look at this stuff. But now they do. Because it's in the big, you know, it's in Vulture and everything. And I just feel, I don't know, it kind of, it's a little disappointing to me, I guess. I like the surprise.
Well, there's been recently a case of some shame being thrown at other content creators for even being seen in the comments of other. It was quickly taken down. I could get into details, but this happened before. I just briefly, I don't care for content creators that just create content based off of plot leaks, especially recently when the plot leaks are all, if you've ever even read a script outline, you would know these are not something a professional would do. This didn't come from HBO, but there's no substance to just waiting for what Watchers on the Wall does and then making a quick video verbatim. Yeah. And I know writers from Watchers on the Wall, they do a wonderful job. That's great for them. They're doing right. their job.
Exactly.
But as a content creator, yeah. it becomes third hand journalism.
Yeah, yeah.
And vice versa. If the written press does the, you know, a Reddit theory, it's like, well, third hand journalism, and especially when they're not even anything new. I won't get it. I crap on that enough in my own thing, but it's about, are you able to separate this information from your, you know, actual thoughts and opinions, and yeah. a lot of people probably can't. So it's all, there's a group for everybody. I think the demographic of people that hate spoilers is out there. So if you want to avoid them, it's not going to hurt your content. And there's a group of people that like spoilers. So I really think it doesn't affect you one way or the other.
Well, good. Now I feel better.
But then again, what do I know? But go ahead.
It's funny though, because I think that I talked when, you know, Lost is a special show for me, and I kind of live that show as some people live Game of Thrones and, you know, are constantly rereading the books and thinking and talking about it and stuff. And
you're a masochist.
Exactly. You know, that's funny. I read on the Metacritic calendar, I read ahead to when the new George R. R. Martin sci-fi show, I think it's called Nightingales or Night Flyers, is coming out on sci-fi. And the blurb they wrote was literally, and this was on Metacritic just to fuck with people, former author George R. R. Martin. And I was laughing my ass off. I wanted to put that on the Winterfell account, but I was like, because it's like, you know, controversy. They're having fun with it. I thought that was kind of funny. But yeah. I guess to say, I kind of did it with Lost. And when little news would come out, you know, we would have an emergency podcast. But what we quickly found is we'd talk about it for like 3 minutes. And then the whole rest of the podcast would just be us talking about something else. You know, it would become a ramble cast pretty quickly. There's not a lot of substance to it. So I just wanted to bring it up. And you want to say something?
Yeah, well, it just depends on if you consider yourself to be a theory crafter, which I've had some of my biggest success, which, you know, whatever, the tallest midget in the room, not the popular term, but whatever. You know, I gained 1,000 subscribers off of just one of my, about Winterfell being Lightbringer, you know, using the prophecy and adapting it and so forth. So if you primarily make videos like that, which I don't anymore, then it is a little bit of a problem if you're just so, you know, embroiled with the spoilers. Because it's like, is this really this guy's idea, or is this coming from just like a place of, you know, he found out about it online, so now he's acting like it's his. I think that you cover and I cover more so the broader picture of how it's made, you know, it, plus how much we enjoy it.
Yeah.
If you're just doing theories, I think it's a little bit different. You have to draw the line if you're going to actually indulge in the spoilers.
True. So let's talk about the news just on its face then. Okay. Just a little convo about that. I got kind of excited about it. I like the idea of this being a propulsive, you know, I hear a couple people quoting that's going to be 12 hours. It's only 6 episodes, but they're saying they're going to be feature length. I think we're probably going to end up with closer to maybe, you know, I don't know, 80 minutes, 90 minutes, if that. I mean, I don't know how many 120-minute episodes we're going to get, but it doesn't really matter. I got excited by it, and I think that it sounds like it's going to be very fun. And honestly, a 55-day battle scene that should rival stuff that you'd see in the movie theaters, which, by the way, I already think at least three battles in Game of Thrones have already rivaled or are the best action scenes that I've seen in the past 5 or so years. Hard Home, to me, was the most intense, huge, big battle scene that I've seen in, I would say, I'd be confident in saying the last 5 years. I thought that that battle was better than the last Infinity War battle at the end. It was better than even some of the stuff I would say like that was in The Raid, a movie like that, that's like close hand-to-hand combat stuff. I would thought it was better than that too. So they don't have anything to prove to me, but it did get me more excited about Game of Thrones coming back. I'll admit it.
Yeah, obviously it's exciting. And I have, because I've been doing an ongoing project, like I've spoken about, I believe on this cast before, where I've been breaking down the amount of minutes, literally, that we've seen on screen for each season and how they have decreased, but the amount of story we have received has increased. And that doesn't really serve as a sign of quality storytelling. Yeah. It is decreasing a little bit, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter for this conversation. Quality doesn't matter. But of course, all these things, like all these statements from the cast, they're always very exciting, and they are always along the same lines because it's the business. And of course, they have to say everything is going to be the best it's ever been.
Yeah.
In the 55 days that we're looking at for shooting, compared to the Battle of the Bastards, which I think next to Spoils of War is, you know, I actually think Battle of the Bastards is better because it actually served emotionally for the story a little bit better.
True. Well,
Spoils of War didn't make much sense, but it was really, it was like, I just took it as a Michael Bay movie itself because it was just awesome. It didn't make a lot of sense the way it happened or why it was happening, but whatever. It was beautiful. But with this 55 days compared to Battle of the Bastards, think about how much CGI VFX that you had in Battle of the Bastards. You had, 1-1, you had the giant. That's it.
Yeah.
Now, there's always VFX work done.
Right.
But Ghost background was actually not a part of that battle because of budget and time. But there was a lot of practical in that. So this, obviously, with the dead, the battle against the dead is going to have far more VFX than anything. So it, of course, is going to take a lot longer. I don't know how much we can judge these 55 days as far as quality and scale goes, because it could be even a smaller battle overall, even though I don't believe it would be, but still take more time than something that has less VFX. That's all I'll say on that.
Yes, definitely. You're absolutely right. I'm glad you said that. From a production standpoint, a number of days doesn't mean that every day was spent doing some huge stunt or something like that. You know what I mean? And depending upon where you're shooting, it can take longer to do things. We don't know where it is. If they're doing it in actual cold weather, you know, as they've shot before. But I'm excited about it. Game of Thrones, it's kind of getting back on the radar. We got to get back in. Mike's been a bit busy. I hope I get to continue our series that we did, the director series, but I'm definitely going to get back into that. This is really pushing me to do that because I'm pretty excited about it. All right, now I got three quick pieces of news. I'm not sure. I'd like to hear what Justin thinks. I don't know if he's fans of these. These are two films and a TV show. I'm going to start out with the TV show. The OA season 2 is still happening. It's been almost 2 years since the first season of the OA premiered. Now, if you don't know, it was one of the strangest shows that Netflix has paid to make, from Britt Marling and Zal Badamanglia, sorry about that. And they have worked together on a bunch of other films. And if you've heard me before, you know I love them. The East, Another World. Just this woman and this dude are so up my alley, the weird emotional sci-fi stuff that they do. Now, have you seen any of those films, or have you seen the OA, Justin?
I did watch the first episode. It was okay. As you know, I run the Westworld Amino, and I was bombarded when it came out with people suggesting it to me, and it didn't catch for me.
Okay.
But it does look like something that would work for
did
me.
You ever see Another World and The East?
I did not.
I'm going to send you, I'll send you some links, because I think you may enjoy them from the perspective of it just being really artistic and interesting sci-fi, but emotional. And the OA, I can't even describe what it is. It's one of the weirdest shows. It also has the weirdest, most outlandishly strange finale that somehow works and is just, I can't say weird enough, but I'm super excited. If you're an OA fan,
Is that the elevator pitch for it? The weird, we can't explain it. The weird, awesome. They're like, sold. Netflix will pick it up.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. It's like, it's so, I can't even explain what it's about because I don't want to give it away, but also because I can't even explain it. But it looks like, you know, Britt Marling put a little bit of a thing on Instagram, and she said, "I just finished sound mixing chapter 2. It's coming. Long AF answer. Swipe to deep dive." And then she goes into a little bit of a Instagram story or something. I I'm an old person. I don't know what that means. But anyway, the point is there's no air date, but it's coming, and I'm super excited because it's super weird, and I will definitely be talking about it on the show. Now, the next piece of news I have is about a great film. I don't know if you've seen it, Justin. It's called Force Majeure. Did you ever see that movie?
Wow. No, I didn't. Okay. We should have done notes for this episode, but yes, no, I did not. Hey guys, no, why am I here? I'm on cufflinks.com above us looking at the Game of Thrones. I literally am. You'll see it in the video. I'm shopping right now, but yes, go ahead and continue.
Okay. Listen, I know. I'm sorry, man. These came in late and I just had to mention them.
I feel like you're shaming me a little bit.
No, not at all, buddy. Not at all. It was a con winning, and I think actually was submitted for the Academy Awards as the best foreign language film. It's a Swedish dramedy. And basically the point of the movie is this, okay? A dude goes to a ski resort with his family. A huge cave-in, and what's that called when the snow starts coming down on you?
Ooh, I got this, so I'm useful. Avalanche.
Avalanche, exactly. So an avalanche happens, and instead of grabbing his kids, the dude grabs his phone and runs.
This is called Journey East, because I'm going to pull it up.
No, it's called Force Majeure.
Ooh, I was waiting.
And it is a really crazy movie. And basically the movie that happens, I'm not giving too much away because that's the way most people describe this film. They showed it in the preview. Not that I'm a fan of previews spoiling everything, but that's just the setup, because basically it's about what choices people make today and how instinctual we get with our phones and technology. And the point is that Will Ferrell and Julia Louis-Dreyfus, if I can speak today, are going to star in a remake of this. It's called Downhill. And Nat Faxon and Jim Rash, who wrote The Descendants, and I'm a huge fan of both of those guys. You remember Jim Rash from Community. Nat Faxon has been on a bunch of different sitcoms that I've enjoyed. And they're going to direct it. And I just think this sounds like it could be one of the funniest, weirdest movies, because the Swedish one was really a bit more serious. And I cannot even imagine Will Ferrell and Julia Louis-Dreyfus as a married couple in this movie. It just sounds like this is going to be the funniest, strangest, highbrow, weird, lowbrow movie ever. And I'm very excited about it. Can I say
what I think it's gonna, what it sounds like?
Yes.
An ice cold knockout. Brilliantly funny, perceptive, and frostily funny. I'm reading the tagline for it.
Oh my God.
People on the video will be able to see how much I'm lying. But yeah, it is. It looks interesting. Will Ferrell, Julia Louis-Dreyfus. She's back from breast cancer too.
Good for her.
Something happened. So good for her. Good for her.
This is great. Nat Faxon and Jim Rash too. I'm a huge fan of them. Those guys are fantastic. All right. Last bit of news until we get into our discussion. And that is that one of my favorite directors, the man himself, Jeff Nichols, Take Shelter, Midnight Special, most recently did the drama Loving about the first interracial marriage case, or not first, but the ground that made it legal in certain states and then challenged that across the country, is directing an Alien Nation remake. And it's kind of been off and on for like 2 years, but it looks like it's happening. And he's really down deep into the script phase. They haven't cast or anything, but this is going to be pretty awesome. So I'm really excited. I know that I usually like a director like Jeff Nichols to do an original. And did you see Midnight Special?
Yes, I did.
What did you think of it?
I enjoyed it. Okay. I enjoyed it. It's definitely one of the odder films.
Yes. But yes. I enjoyed it. And that's what I loved about it, because it's not often that they give somebody money to go out and make something like that, you know? And the movie was super weird. I thought it was a real throwback to like the 70s Firestarter, all those 70s movies where, you know, that one with Christopher Walken when they can go into people's dreams, and then there's of course the other one with I'm losing it. Jeff Bridges. Okay.
Oh, Jeff Bridges.
When Jeff Bridges played the guy, he was like a hustler and he had psychic powers. There were just all these weird psychic power, government conspiracy, some weird organization movies in the 70s. And Midnight Special to me really kind of conglomerated them all into something modern and cool. And I don't know if you ever saw Take Shelter with Michael Shannon.
Oh, yeah. I'm a huge Michael Shannon fan. Okay. All around. So, yes, I have actually.
Yes. Yeah, so, Take Shelter was fantastic. And I, having been a person who was deathly afraid of tornadoes when I lived in Durham, where they don't even really happen that often. I mean, you live out there. They don't really happen that often. But the storms do get intense. Take Shelter scared the crap out of me. So, I'm just excited, man. I was also a huge Alien Nation fan. I went out, I ended up reading like the book series that was, I don't remember if it came before or after the movie, but there was a comic book series I read too. And I don't know, were you much of a fan of Alien Nation?
No, I'm reading up on it right now. He just came out with a statement. This is 2 hours ago, talking about how he's been working on it for 2 years. The screenplay is almost done and he hopes his final draft. Evidently he's been, giving this a treatment for quite a while. So, yeah, it seems like he's very passionate about it and that he's surprised he's getting, you know, some financial backing for it because it is quite, out there. So I'm interested.
I loved Alien Nation. When I was a kid, that was such a popular movie. And it said so – it really is a precursor to District 9. Isn't that what that was called? That Neil Blomkamp movie?
Yeah, I love that movie.
Okay, well, I thought that was basically, in a lot of ways, and he said it later, that Alien Nation was kind of an inspiration in a lot of ways, and it really is, and I loved Alien Nation. I mean, it was a little cheesy and such, and it, you know, it kind of holds up, but Mandy Patinkin, fantastic. James Caan was actually, you know, he was a little old for the character he was playing, I thought, you know, but even
when talk about Jimmy Caan that way.
It was a little, you know, I thought they...
But I like what you're saying about this, though, because we were talking about this with Westworld, and I've been doing the series of streams about the influences. It's like, I can tell if I did like District 9, now I'm going to look into this, because if they were influenced or, you know, vice versa, it doesn't matter. The influences are important, and it's kind of knowing your palate.
Yep.
And if I like District 9, I'm most likely going to like Alien Nation, or at least I won't hate it.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. So I was happy to have that fun news, those little news bits. Sorry to throw them at you, but
Oop. Update, though, it's been canceled.
What's been canceled?
Alien Nation.
Oh, really?
No, I'm joking. Oh. It's on
Netflix canceled it?
No. It's 2 hours ago, he's still optimistic, so it's still going strong.
I know. In this day and age, you never know, right? That was when, like, we thought we were going to get, when Blomkamp was going to do, however you pronounce the name, was going to do Aliens, a new Aliens with Sigourney Weaver. And he put all this stuff on Twitter, like all the drawings and everything. And it was basically to try to get them not to cancel it. And everyone got excited. And then like the next day, the news was, oh, by the way, he did that because they were canceling it.
Yeah, Deadpool did that, and you see that happening. You see people leaking even false information about people being considered for Bond, like Richard Madden after Bodyguard on Netflix and all that. And those talks weren't even happening. But it's possible because of the buzz that they're definitely paying attention. Those talks could happen. So sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't.
Cool. All right. Well, I want to get into our discussion, but I did realize I need to at least mention that there's a fourth cool things dropping on streaming tonight, and I just had to at least mention it. I'm going to end up talking about these later, but on Amazon Prime, Homecoming, the Julia Roberts, Sam Ismail directed and written adaptation of, I think it was an Israeli series, a psychological thriller, is dropping. It's already available to watch on Amazon Prime. That sounds awesome. Big Mr. Robot fan, so I'm really interested to see. This is kind of his follow-up series to Mr. Robot, because Mr. Robot ends after next season. And also on Netflix, the last season of House of Cards, which is, I think it's only like 6 or 8 episodes. This is the Kevin Spacey-less version of it, which, I don't know. Did you watch House of Cards? Are you a House of Cards fan?
I was a huge House of Cards fan, and I fell off about 2 seasons ago.
Okay.
I did watch most of last season, but my understanding is that the books that it's based off of, and I know there's the British series.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure this comes from books. The source is actually books, I believe. I know you don't do a lot of editing, so I will edit that out if I'm incorrect on my end. But I think that he is not that. His character isn't there in the end anyways, so it is what it is.
Oh, interesting.
I'll watch it, though. Okay. I'm even watching the rest of The Walking Dead, at least till Rick's death.
Yeah,
and,
me too.
I won't get into it, but I have to finish what I started when it comes to how invested I get. But Julia Roberts is in this Homecoming, huh? I'm looking at it right
now. Yeah, Homecoming, dude. This is really supposed to be fantastic. Oh, you know what? It wasn't based on an Israeli show. I don't know why. Every time I always think it's an Israeli show, but I still thought this was somehow, but this is based on a Gimlet Media fiction podcast. So it's actually based on a fucking podcast. Wow.
Can you get any more niche? Yeah. And I say new ideas don't get developed anymore. Wow. But, I should start reading my script on here and see if I can get it up.
House of Cards, though, I'm going to watch it. My wife and I have kept up on it. And honestly, in reference to what you were saying, I was going to say it anyway, and I've said it before. I would have hoped that they killed him off coming into this season anyway, because she really has become the star of the show, and he was just doing the same old garbage over. He was getting lame.
Unbelievable. So, the stuff he was doing just got so out there. But and what's her name? Robin
Wright.
Yeah. She's a fantastic on her own. She could have carried the last 2 seasons. Yep. So whatever you feel about if Scandal should, affect people's jobs, it doesn't really matter. I think the series is better for it.
Yep. All right. Now, there are 2 more things I want to mention. 2 of them come together, so it's actually 3. Netflix is dropping a Peter Bogdanovich cut of what would have been Orson Welles' final film called The Other Side of the Wind. And I am interested to check it out. It's kind of a mockumentary. I guess it's a little bit like F is for Fake. And I think that this sounds really interesting. And going alongside of it, there's a documentary by Morgan Neville that's chronicling the last years of Orson Welles' life. And that also drops on Netflix today. So this is super cool. I am a very big Orson Welles fan. I think most film people are. Let's not forget, this was the first guy who ever came up with the idea to cut a hole in the floor so the camera could look up. There you go. Lighting.
Not for dirty reasons.
Not for dirty reasons.
Did you ever see his French wine commercial?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
It's very well done.
And of course, some people will know Orson Welles as being the voice of, what is it? What was he? Proteus Prime?
Worlds.
Or no, remember, he was in the Transformers. They got him for
Optimus
the Transformers Prime movie. He was, he wasn't Optimus. He was the, like, the mega planet or whatever they fought in the original bad Transformers movie that they tried to make, like, adult for some weird reason.
Yeah, I don't like junk, so I don't know.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, anyway.
I did like the original. Michael Bay all the way.
Yeah, Mike. Oh, God. Orson Welles, love the man. I think this will be supremely interesting. I'm a little bit more interested in the documentary, honestly, than I am in a film finished by someone else, but it is got a pedigree, and I think that it should be pretty cool. And actually, Frank Marshall was a production manager during the original shoot, and he gave notes on what he thought should happen in the film. So that's kind of cool. Last thing, really quick. Just to highlight it, History Channel is premiering at 9:00, a 3-night, 6-hour documentary on Watergate that is directed by Charles Ferguson, who directed a great doc called Inside Job. And, it's worth taken. Oh, actually, that was a movie too, but there was also a doc. I think it's going to be really cool. So I might check that out.
I'm fascinated by Nixon.
Yeah. Especially what's going on now. Might as well take a look at what happened before, because history tends to repeat itself.
In Watergate was done pretty. It was a third-rate robbery job or whatever. And this, what's happening right now, is so much dumber. That's why they call it dumb Watergate. This is like the teapot scandal with my 1920s. Yeah, these are those Ohio boys owning everything again.
But there you go. Gets
1920s warding, whatever.
Yes, you're like that teapot dome scandal.
I find it fascinating.
It is. When you go back in history and you look at some of the really, like we do, what's happening now today is strange and weird and frightening. But when you look back in history, you find people have always been strange and weird and frightening. And there's a lot of weird kind of scandals and weird things that happen. But I wanted to point this out because there's so many different Watergate docs that this one actually is getting a lot of good reviews. And you never know these days when something is on, History Channel, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Like it can be really crappy, but this looks like it's actually like a real good documentary. So I'm going to check
Nixon
it out.
Nixon is the most conflicting president, at least in my eyes, that we've ever had. I won't get into it too much, but very successful statesman, very successful with his overseas policy. But then he did so much bad stuff even before he got elected with messing with peace talks. If you listen to the Nixon tapes that he recorded himself, I don't know why all these guys record themselves. They're saying horrible things. But hubris. That's what boned him on Watergate, but I would say, is an effective president, he did more than Kennedy, but he also did some terrible, terrible things. So it is what it is. But he's a very interesting person.
Very interesting. All right, baby. You want to jump into our talk here, man? Because I know that you have a lot to say. First off, let's start off on that. So once again, I'm going to put it in the show notes, but this comes from, we're going to kind of talk around three different things here and there, but Dark Horizon, Steve McQueen says peak TV era is over. Fast Company had an interesting article called The Death of Hollywood's Middle Class, how Netflix and the streaming wars are creating massive income inequality in the entertainment industry. And then there was an interesting thing here where Netflix, which never gives out its numbers, a company is trying to basically sleuth Netflix and saying that Iron Fist and Luke Cage lost up to 60% of their viewers in their second season, and that's why they were canceled. And, we had talked a little bit about maybe they were canceled because Disney is doing this and that, but I thought that was interesting because it kind of is like the everything old is new again. You know what I mean? Like, why was it canceled? Oh, intrigue. No, people just didn't like it, But let's start with Steve McQueen, a great director, soon coming out with what looks like a super cool, I guess it's like kind of a heist movie. What's it called? Wives or something like that? I can't remember.
Widows. The opposite of wives. Okay. Well, not the opposite. That would be okay. I'm insensitive. Widows.
Widows. But I want to read his quote. TV had its moment. It's fodder now, isn't it? It's fodder. There was a moment in the 90s or early 2000s when it was amazing, and now it's just get stuff done. We need stuff. I don't know what's happening now, but obviously the quality has gone down a little bit. There's more of it, but less quality. I don't like TV. There was some great stuff, but it's just bad now. I would never do it. There's too much. You can't see the books from the trees. You need a situation where there's a little bit of curating going on. Writing is one thing, but I don't think TV does what cinema can do. I just don't think that's possible. This is not to sort of say one is better than the other. Well, that's exactly what he said. But I know what I prefer. I prefer cinema, and that's fine. Silence is a very, very big factor. Scope is another factor, which is more familiar to me as far as being a human being is concerned. We don't talk all the time. We think a lot as well. He then went on to cite Netflix Ozark as an example of the end of peak TV, calling it a little more than a ripoff of the admittedly superior Breaking Bad. Now, there is a note here that McQueen previously signed on with HBO to create a series, but the network didn't pick it up.
And I'm sure that had nothing to do with this. I've got this article highlighted above us right now, and I've got opinions.
Get into it, baby. I'm ready to hear.
Well, So much wrong with that quote, in my opinion. Whatever. I'm not going to, I don't personally have any feelings on Steve McQueen other than what I've seen from this article. So I guess they're not great. But I mean, yeah, this seems pretty spiteful. And I'm sure that if he had his project go through with HBO, he probably wouldn't be so negative. But yeah, he contradicts himself in this quote. As you pointed out, and it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me when he says writing is one thing. Where is it? Right here. Writing is one thing. Going up to now, I've lost it and it's right in front of me. Okay, writing is one thing, but I don't think TV does what cinema can do. It's like, what does that even mean? Number one,
I
think that he's a little bit butthurt, and talking about silence is a big factor. Scope is another. Scope is the only thing, I guess, that a cinema can give you that TV can't, just literally at the most base level because of the size of screen and, you know, sound. But, you know, he's talking about how people don't talk all the time. We think, then write a book, I guess, because that's the only way you get that internal dialogue. I just think this guy's butthurt, and he's talking about a lot of things being ripoffs. Okay, Breaking Bad, if you want to say, you know, Ozark is a ripoff of Breaking Bad, Breaking Bad is The Godfather. There's everything is inspired
by
something else.
Good point.
And this guy just, you know, yeah, Vinyl failed and he probably, you know, they dropped him because the budget was low or whatever. But hey, man, don't, you know, just say your movie can be good without TV being bad, right?
Yeah.
One doesn't depend on the other. I find this to be a very, very just poorly stated and coming from a place of spite. And I don't see a lot of substance behind it because there's saturation in everything. I think that there's no argument, at least an intelligent one, saying that TV used to be better. What is he talking about? What does he want? Good times come back? I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of what you're saying, and I just would say his premise is wrong. I think there's been talk of the, you know, the difference between this whole idea of that there was like the golden age of TV and it was like Sopranos and Mad Men. And then it was the silver age. And now it's peak TV. There's too much TV. There's too much this. There's too much that. For me, the reason why I brought in those other articles was because I think it's more interesting to look at the way things change rather than trying to classify it as being particularly something now, because it changes so fast. So instead of saying TV, it's peak TV, let's just say TV's on a wave, you know, and we're going up and down. And he has a little bit of a point that there is a push to get things out. And you do see things like Netflix bloat. All the Marvel shows were 3 to 5 episodes too long. And that's because they want to be able to have a certain amount of content, you know what I mean, to sell to people. But he's so wrong about everything else. To say that people, and it's so wildly contradicting, and I don't want to just jump on him because he is a magnificent director. I mean, Shame, he did 10 Years a Slave. This guy is amazing, you know, and he is a real artist. And I guess he's frustrated maybe thinking that, you know, film, this old kind of thing that film is high culture and TV is low culture, which there is really no such thing in America, especially anymore. And I don't think in the world. I think there's just culture now, which is upsetting for some people, liberating for others. But TV is, I even disagree with the peak TV golden age thing, because I think when I look at some shows now, I think there may be greater shows on right now than when Sopranos and Mad Men and all these shows started. There's so, it's like every other month we get a show that could be fantastic, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know what he's talking about. I think you're right. I think he's sore that he couldn't find his mark within it. But we don't really need to keep beating on him, but let's talk about the larger thing. What other ideas do you have about that?
Are storytellers.
Yeah.
You know, so what story do you want to tell, and which medium is appropriate for the story you want to tell? Because this changes from, and this applies to the Netflix and all the streaming, a story that is told via a streaming service compared to HBO, and even HBO compared to AMC, are all going to be very drastically different than if they were on another medium. So movies suit themselves, like as you said about the Game of Thrones earlier, about how it's kind of more of a feature film as far as the pacing is going to go for the last season. That makes sense because they just need to get the good guys to fight the bad guys and have an outcome. Your basic arc, your basic hero's journey, whatever you want to call it. It's not a saga. You're not, people are being intrigued with stories that in television that does it well, where you have Walter White from Breaking Bad, for example, that we get to see him solve his initial conflict. The catalyst is, you know, he needs that money and he is dying and he chooses to go about it in a way that's not ethical or moral. So, but right. Once he gets the money, just like in life, once you achieve what you think your goal was, life keeps happening. So if you can organically keep telling a story that makes sense and builds off of it, that's good. He is correct in saying there's a lot of junk out there, but there's always a lot of junk out there and there's always a lot of good. It's yeah. not like,
and there's a lot there's of junky movies too.
Yeah, that's what he said. I mean, there's junk all the time. So.
Like what, look, it's you're he's getting confused between like art and commerce, and he's blaming, it's like they say, don't hate the player, hate the game. Yeah. Well, for a certain respect, I understand that. And then even though there's still some players I hate, but you know, you have different sides. But I just think that it's silly. Even a statement like the, you have time to, that film is somehow more contemplative, that people don't need to talk, that you can show things. Watch Better Call Saul. And, you know, there was like a whole episode where no one talked. Watch, there's so many different, like I just mentioned the OA. It had long segments where no one speaks. And it's even, it's movement.
Go make some German expressionism or something.
Yeah, and there's always a place for it. Yeah, exactly. And if the market, not even not the market, but the people don't, are not receptive to it, or it's, you're not able to get it out to them, it's not the fault of the medium itself. And I think it lends itself to a bigger examination of TV. And I, you know, for me, it's just the idea that it is so ever changing. And these labels that we place on it are so arbitrary. And the next day it's something different, because one thing, like I'll give an example. Nobody ever mentions The Shield.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Shield fan. And when I think of what really started the kind of serialized storytelling that found the kind of halfway point between like soap opera and drama television and prestige, I think like The Shield deserves even more credit than The Sopranos, really.
Because, hey, we talked about this off air, and you said that The Sopranos was better. I made that statement. Now you stuck by The Sopranos because I got fired up.
I guess better is if you subjectively, of course, for me, overall, I would say The Sopranos was deeper for me, but there was something that The Shield had where it was both candy and medicine. You know what I mean? Like it was brilliant, but it would also have a 10-minute chase scene through the alley where guys were just beating the hell out of each other, like similar to Sons of Anarchy. You know, I had a lot of the same people involved with it. But I think that rather than think that thing that's over, it's even interesting to go back and relook at the classifications that we give to these things. And even if when it is the difference between film and TV, I don't really know what that there is a difference. I really don't.
Yeah. I mean, there is, but it doesn't mean it's better or worse. Like I said, I don't really think people understand how the medium, how much it has an impact on the story that is being told and the way it is told. The script that I'm working on right now, I have to decide on if I'm writing this with the idea of it being on AMC, because if I do, I have to write it drastically different because I have to account for act breaks, meaning you must write your dialogue in a way that it's going to leave me rooms for commercials. And those are mini cliffhangers. You have to leave anticipation to get people through the commercials. If HBO, I don't have to have that. But if it's on a streaming network, that's what I'm envisioning for this, I have to factor in the whole, if I'm basing this, my series kind of lends itself to theory crafting. That doesn't work as well. for Netflix because it all gets released at once. So everything about these mediums, you know, besides my shitty screenplay I'm writing, but you know, it affects Hollywood screenplay writers as well, because they have to have this with an idea in mind. That's why they kind of have a high concept pitch, your elevator pitch and stuff like that. They don't before they start writing. But the point is, your story, the medium in which it's told, doesn't make the story better or worse. It just does make it different, if that makes sense.
No, it does. That's a really interesting point, because I did start by saying that I don't know if there's a difference. And then you're illustrating how big the difference can even be in television within one medium itself. And it's a delivery system, right? Mm-hmm. And a movie that comes out on Netflix and a movie that comes out in the theater. There is a kind of, perhaps it's an intelligentsia, you know, film Twitter or whatever, that seems to still have, and me being a film guy, you know, working at World Video, working in the industry, I understand that there is this kind of almost just, it's a given that film is more elevated, and kind of, I think maybe what he's challenging, that's kind of, he wants to reset those boundaries, you know, like peak TV. It's too much now. You thought you could be film. You thought you could create on the artistic level on this playing field. But I have judged that you can't, which I think is kind of silly, because one of the things I've noticed is that people don't often speak about this, but I see the Marvel films, the endless sequels, as the TVization of the film industry. Those Marvel movies are TV shows. They're chapters in an ongoing book. And that's why for a long time, I would say, I don't really even consider them films. They're chapters in a long Marvel TV show that they release in movie theaters. It's like the Fast and the Furious or something, you know, it's like, it's a series. Now, the marketing is different. The money is different. The right? Like, of course, the industry's different. But when you look at it on that level of like art, you know, it's kind of interchangeable.
Well, there's an appeal to it, especially not only for the business side, because of how many toys you can sell, obviously, with, you know, these films, and how there's a pre-established fan base and a demographic. But there is the advantage also, which I am always talking about, I wish I saw more new works being made, original works, and stop telling me another story about the story. Tell me a new story. I don't want a new Star Wars. I want the next Star Wars. Yeah. But there's an advantage for a writer to, before, you remember, you had all those commercials where it's like, in a world, we're cars, our horses, you know, or some BS. You notice you don't have to have, and that's never in a trailer anymore, because it just puts the Marvel logo up, and that's your world. You don't need to explain theme. You don't need to, and it's not a, I don't look at that IP. I don't look at that as like a cheap thing or to whatever, down on it. It's very, it allows stories. Like, I still didn't like Infinity War, but the only reason that movie was able to start off and go as fast paced as it was because they had like, what, like 13 movies that led up to it. So you already knew the world in which you were, conveying your story through, and people knew what it was as well. So there's an advantage, and that's, you know, some of the reason I believe why everybody wants a universe, but I think they're quickly finding. And speaking to your point about their TV shows, Hawkeye, I believe, and who else is it? Bucky the Winter Soldier.
Oh, yeah, Winter Soldier, Falcon, and, right? Yeah, they're all getting TV, which I'm all about. I'm like, I think that's the way to do it. I love that idea. I said this years ago. I say, you know what they should do is they should just buy a TV station. So what they did is they made a streaming service. Just do that, because people will be down for it. They've been telling these comic book stories for years. And also, they can be reinvented. You know, when one Captain America dies, a new one comes, and it's even cool to see. It's like Doctor Who, right? Ooh, the new Doctor, you know?
But good. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, so, I also wanted to... Oh, I'm sorry, buddy. Did you want to say something?
No, I was just agreeing.
I just wanted to, because I like that you brought up, you know, the ways in which you write the script, to think about that onto different networks. And that's why I had sent you this other article about the streaming services kind of killing Hollywood's middle class. And it's just interesting to take a look behind the curtain and see the way that even with... so many more shows being made, it can make it harder to work in the industry because you don't attach yourself to steady work. So you end up getting everything becomes freelance. You jump from one picture to the next to the next. And what you don't, what you kind of lose in a little bit of a way is something that, or becomes less long lasting, is that idea of a company, of like creating something together and coming back. Now, they often bring people back, but I'm talking about even like the little people, you know, the assistant editor and, you know, So I thought that article, I don't have super much more to say. I don't know if you do, but it just, it brings to light that idea that, you know, we're watching this stuff and you think more is always better, but sometimes you change.
But who is it better for?
Exactly.
It is, I think more is better for us, and you have to really take the standpoint. And again, you've heard me mention my crappy screenplay that I'm writing. You know, it would be in my best interest if there was more opportunities, obviously. I don't have my eggs in the Hollywood basket. But the point is, I think that there's a real danger in keeping jobs around, not for the betterment of us. You know, so, like, look, let's use coal jobs as a metaphor here. You know, what happened to big coal? It's like, well, what happened to big, you know, like lumber? I don't know what they call it. But, you know, before coal, you did your wood burning stove. It's like, how far do we have to go back? How archaic do we need to go back to please people? You have a job because the job is in need, not because, you know, I mean, hey, capitalism works, but sometimes it's inconvenient, I guess. So, I mean, you know, everybody loves freedom and all this, but, you know, they no socialism, no communism. But where's my coal job? It's like, well, I guess that you'd be fine in a, you know, a socialist state because you'd just be getting money. You know, I'm sorry, but that capitalism and that freedom you love so much is not advantageous for you at this moment. So, yeah, I mean, I guess there's a point here, but there's another point, and they talk about it in a few of these articles, which I listen to a lot of podcasts with people that do create comedians, specifically that create for Netflix. And a lot of times, and it says it right in here, you don't have to even give them copies of scripts, in a lot of cases, and you skip all of this, all of the red tape of networks that you'd have to do. And there is an advantage to that, and there is a risk to that. And I know the people that are actually investing in Netflix are not liking a large amount of money that they're just handing over the projects, but there is also a freedom, because I know that when, like, comedies like Seinfeld were the exception, usually they would have a sitcom where you have up to 18 and even more staff writers that the person that
to death.
Yes. That, that you don't use a joke, the best joke, you use Melissa's
the death of a thousand joke. Cuts.
Yes. Because, oh, they haven't had a joke in 3 weeks. It's like, no, okay, well, you don't need it. Like, that writer's strike was kind of, as somebody that writes, that was kind of, if you look at the industry, BS to begin with, because they're just, you know, there's such a huge stable of writers on, you know, retainer for these networks that you don't get two guys writing the show anymore. You get all these people, and there's no collaborative situation I've ever been in that works to that. So there's advantages and disadvantages. And yeah, look at the grips and the lighting guys. It may be, you know, working on Married with Children for 20 years or however long it was on, it was very beneficial for them and their families because they're union people, and it's hard work, and, you know, we have to think about them. But it's like, what are we really supposed to do? Are we really supposed to cater? You know, that's never going to work. That's never going to work for to have the society cater to, because everybody likes to act like they care about other people. But at the end of the day, hey, they just want to watch good TV. So if it's not working out as much for the smaller guy, I'm sorry, but it is over the counter content, meaning there isn't the red tape. There isn't
You have to accept the both sides of the wave, right?
Yes.
The change comes. And to the gist of what you were saying, people have to learn that, like with this article, and I think this article was an interesting one. I think it did kind of ally itself in a way with political things, when I think that more so, it's interesting to see. I saw a similar thing happen. So, for instance, when Mike and I were working as PAs, and when I worked at my brother work as a production coordinator and a producer on all these commercials, and a lot of also fashion shoots that were happening in Manhattan. And at a certain point, the work for those was any day I could wake up and get a job and get paid. Like, well, I think the base was like 250 or 275 for which amounted to about a 12-hour day. And if it hit 16 hours, I got time and a half. And I could work for a week and make enough money and not have to work for a couple of weeks. So we could go out and shoot stuff or take a job doing video or something, you know? But after a while, those jobs started to dry up. And a lot of it was 9/11. A lot less people were shooting because they couldn't get permits. It wasn't that free New York shooting on the street things. But time changed. And then it turned out that there was a lot of fashion shoots. Then I'd get hired and get paid the same amount of money to do nothing and watch beautiful people get their picture taken. So yeah. Times change. It's just interesting to me that to think, just to consider for a moment, that when you see the changes on the top, peak TV, golden age, you know, you also see the changes on the bottom, and the people actually making it have a different experience in making what they're making.
I do have to just put out my opinion. I don't have a lot of research done on this because I just got this article from you. But, you know, we have to look at who this is coming from, this Jack Allison. This is not coming from this, you know, we're speaking about the small guys, the PAs, the grips, you know, your continuity editors, your people that are, you know, your script supervisors, people to make sure to say, hey, that coffee cup wasn't in your fucking right hand. It was in your left hand last when we started shooting, you know, let's make sure that happens. Game of Thrones is a better one. But that's not talking about this is Jack. This is a comedian that is a staff writer for the Jimmy Kimmel Show. You know, so this is you know also high.
Right. Yep.
This is not the little guy people. And look at me. I'm a wannabe writer, and I'm still not on board with this.
Yeah.
I find it hard to believe that this is affecting negative. I mean, there's more opportunities for shows, and yes, they get cut. But what happened? I mean, come on, how many shows on Fox get cut every single year they come out? You know. Last Man Standing, anything, Son of Zorn, you know, it doesn't matter. It's the entertainment business. It's dictated by what people like. People are fickle. It's, you know, don't go out to Hollywood expecting to get a steady job.
It's hard, dude. Yeah, I have to say, yeah, that's a good point, brother. That's just like a lot of times I hear directors say, you know, for film that they're not giving as much money. And I complain that they don't give as much money to adult dramas and things like that. And then I just think to myself, my God, what I could make for $1 million. If you gave me $1 million, I could make a movie that looked like it cost $50 million. I know I could fucking do it. And I think that a lot of people could do that. So even the way that the industry looks at itself is often needs to be kind of recalibrated, because I'm really glad you brought up that point, Justin, because I realized after I read the article and then I was talking about it, as I'm talking, I'm thinking to myself, you know, the article actually talked about people who are a lot richer.
Yeah. I couldn't get my third Mercedes. Oh my God. My house only has four underground.
Exactly. Like, and is that, what is the middle class? Like, that's middle? Okay, if that's middle,
it's the Teamsters.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, those, and they ain't right. Yeah. They ain't like, we ain't working so good no more. Give us some more money. You know, on Seinfeld, we used to make the bucks.
That's but true, man.
Yeah, they're going back to the 1940s to the 80s. You know, I'm sorry, there's not 1,000 more I Love Lucy's, but things evolved. And again, let's talk about the creative freedom that you have, where you don't have especially with Netflix, like now they're trying to hack their numbers, but they don't release the numbers for shows, so it's not, and that probably sadly will change, but you're not, you know, being like, oh well, you're not doing well in the Thursday spot because of your numbers, so you're getting moved. It's just like, hey, make something good. Mm-hmm. And we kind of are like a platform as a whole, so everybody kind of holds each other up. Socialism, it's so terrible. So yeah, and again, hey, capitalism sucks when it doesn't work out for you.
But you bring up a good point about Netflix and the idea that all this stuff getting released and it keeps on coming and coming and coming. And if people want it, they're going to keep on watching it. You know what I'm saying? And if they don't want it, they're not. And it becomes word of mouth, not like the numbers. If I kind of like that Netflix doesn't release numbers, in certain ways, it's bad. It's accountability. It hurts people when they are trying to get paid, from the little to the big guy. But as a viewer, right, I like the idea of them kind of letting the arbiter be us. It at least makes me feel that way, right? That well, I'm talking that about way, this though. Show, so I become a champ. You're right. You're right. I become a champion of it, you know? Yeah, and I talk you're not about this
selling
or that.
To advertisers. Yeah. They're selling to you.
Yes. Yes.
That's why even that's HBO, good. And I'm sorry good, for interrupting, point. But I'm just no, passionate right. about this. And what you're saying is true. It is about you. Even with HBO, you know, it's not about they have to have this and the numbers aren't as good. So Tide isn't going to give them the exactly. media. You know, they can't buy up the media like they used to, and they're not getting the same CPM. It is okay. You know, these people are not subscribing. Like HBO, at the End of Thrones, they will have their, I think it's, what is it, Watchmen that come out before the new series that we're going to yes, be talking about will come out. Watchmen. So really, if you look at the business model for that, of course, they want Watchmen to be good, but in reality, they just need people not to cancel their memberships in between this time.
Yep. So keep another reason to keep the subscription. That you're is absolutely it. Right, brother. All right, cool, man. So that's good. That was a great discussion. And I think next week we were going to talk actually about cord cutting. And there was an article that I had sent you. And you know what? Maybe I'll throw that in the notes so people know what we're talking about next week, so people can read up on that too, because that's an interesting discussion. And if you're listening and you have anything to say about that article or kind of cord cutting and packages, send me an email. It's fun. I mean, I've always asked everyone who writes in. So I know just yesterday I was on the Patreon show. I was talking about Brett wrote in and he was saying that, you know, he cuts the cord, so he wasn't able to listen to some of this stuff, you know, that like you were saying as a content creator, sometimes we could talk about it that way too. All right, we'll keep on going. But anyway, everybody, Justin, let me let you have your last word and your outro here, and then I'll do my little outro.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I always look forward to Fridays. This is very enjoyable for me to do, and I hope people go and check out the Top Shelf Fandom videocast, which I have started. Like I said before, I've stole the idea from Axel, and I have adapted two for everybody, one for Patreon. The goal there is I'm withholding content, and I want people to see that and then want that content, so they join my Patreon for $3. I want to be very upfront about this. I could release it to everybody, obviously, but I'm not going to, in hopes that you do the bare minimum of $3. Again, I could give all of these to you guys, but I'm not going to. I'm withholding. It's the way business works. Yep. So I know I really would appreciate if people went and they signed up for the bare minimum of $3 that you would probably barely notice, hopefully, and it makes a huge impact. I don't make money off of my channel. I just try not to go broke making it. So yeah, look out for this. I'll probably have a lot of this video in my cast. I've done some cast earlier this week, which I'll mash it up. And if you want to have questions, you can always go to topshelfquestions@mail.com and send me in, because I love the rapport you have, Axel, with your followers and subscribers and so forth, your community. So that's, you know, the notes that I've seen. Wow. Those are extremely helpful, and they come from a place of intelligence. So I'm trying to build a community. I'd like to give a quick shout out to the Vikings Aftermath crew. We are talking about Vikings in my next cast, and you guys submitted so many good just topic ideas and had so many good conversations, you know, within the feed itself, that I couldn't be more happy. So thank you guys, and thank you, Axel. And you guys can find me, of course, on any one of the many social media you know, sites that I'm on: Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube, and so forth. topshelffandom@youtube.com.
Awesome. Thank you, Justin. I really appreciate having you on, man. This is a blast, dude. We're going to keep on doing it. I'll be back on Monday. Check us out, dvrpodcast.com. Go to patreon.com/dvr and also email dvrpodcast@gmail.com. I think I'm going to talk a little bit about the Mayans on Monday, and then who knows, some more news. I hope everyone has a fantastic weekend. Thank you once again, Justin. This was a fun time. That was a great talk, brother. And that's it for me. Peace out.